From WXXI News, this is our monthly science roundtable on connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And our connection for this science roundtable is made in a number, 14, as in 14% of engineers in the United States are women. That's it. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics compiled the report a couple of years ago titled Women in the Labor Force and found that despite the push to attract more young women into STEM careers, and engineering in particular, it's not exactly working, or at least we could say it's not working as much as some would like. We're nowhere near parity. How about the rest of STEM, not just engineering? Science and technology and math? Well, the National Science Board reports women remain vastly underrepresented despite the gains, women making up 28% of employed individuals in science and engineering. So right on cue, here's a dissenting voice in the push for more STEM education. CNN's Fareed Zakaria wrote a piece a few weeks ago saying we've become too obsessed with STEM and it's become dangerous. Why? Well, Zakaria says we're pushing students away from the humanities or offering too narrow a focus. So while the White House and nationally recognized educators lead the call for STEM and specifically more women in STEM, Zakaria says we should be pulling back. Well, it's time for our monthly science roundtable. We're looking at women in engineering and you can join the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear from parents, especially when it comes to the different careers that are available to young men and young women. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear about your own experience, about some of the choices you made in education, and how we go about making sure that we try to find parity if we can achieve it in things like STEM, engineering in particular. You can join the conversation at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Let's introduce our guest for the hour. John Waddick is here. He's a professor of engineering, science, and physics at MCC. And John was the 2014 U.S. Professor of the Year for Community Colleges. He got sheepish when I asked him about that, but congratulations on the honor and thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Evan.
It's about time. You've been doing it for 31 years. It's about time that they recognized it. No, very, very serious congratulations. It is a great honor. Also here is Dr. Mark Lamb, who is a senior lecturer at RIT and a faculty advisor for the Society of Women Engineers. Dr. Lamb, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Cassandra Claiborne's here, a director of human resources for Harris Corporation. Going to talk about the employer perspective as we look at women in STEM and women in engineering. Cassandra, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
And here as well is a student. Kirsten Dodson is a, what they call a pioneer student for the first female president of the Student Engineering Leadership Council at MCC. Congratulations on that, and thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And she had to hustle in just to make the appointment, so a little closer to the microphone, and that's the only other instruction I have for you, Kirsten.
Right.
Great to have you here.
Thank you.
I want to start with John Waddick. 31 years at MCC. 31 years ago, you were saying before the hour started, you weren't sure if there was ever a time where there were no female students in the year. It is possible. You've seen change over the years.
Yeah, you know, in a couple of ways. I mean, quantitatively, I mean, we're seeing more women, but qualitatively as well. I mean, a lot of them are at the top of our class. They're starting to so-called lean in now, Evan, like Kirsten, mm-hmm. taking on leadership positions instead of just being, you know, quietly in the corner. They're being out front. And, you know, even though they're in a great minority, I'm really admiring Kirsten to be able to stand up and be the leader in something that, you know, was never seen before. She's the first female president of our Engineering Leadership Council, like you said. And you should see how she handles this group of rowdy guys sometimes.
Well, we're going to talk about that in just a moment. Dr. Mark Lamb, you said there you can recall times being the only female out of 50?
Yeah, so when I went to college, a little bit after John, but still closer to Stone Ages, I would have lectures at University of Buffalo, and I'm in mechanical engineering, and I'd be the only woman in the class.
Out of around 50?
About 50, yeah. And if it was a large lecture, University of Buffalo does 300 student lectures, there might be a handful of us.
What was it like being the only woman in class?
It's interesting. It can be good and it can be bad. It's good because you're the only one, so you're special. But that can also be bad at the same time because you can become a lightning rod. Hmm. So I had one faculty member in particular, he made teasing comments to other students in the class, but those students always called him out on it.
And wow, he made comments about the fact that there was only one woman in class?
He made me feel very uncomfortable about it,
wow.
Yes. He would be like, you know, my parents came in to complain about my last grade, which, I mean, it was a joke. But the thing is, I didn't need that kind of...
No, that is not appropriate.
No. So I raised a flag about it, and it got dealt with. But, you know, that would turn maybe some other people that didn't have the support network that I did, because my parents at home were up in arms about it immediately the day I came home with that story. And also, I was part of the honors program there, and I told them, and they were up in arms. So there was a really good support structure.
The good news is that sounds like an outdated story. I'd be shocked if I heard that kind of story today. No?
Kirsten.
Thank you. Not so much.
All right. Well, look, Kirsten Dodson's here, a student. And tell me, first of all, let's learn a little bit more about you as a student and where you're from originally.
Well, I'm from Spencerport.
Okay.
So born and raised, I went to Greece for a little while and then came back to Spencerport. And then I decided to go to MCC after that. So
what do you want
to
do?
I'm not 100% sure. Right now, I'm an electrical major, engineering major, and I hope to move forward into the business world of engineering. So I hope to obtain my MBA and go that route.
Okay. And when you were looking at your possible careers, your educational options, what was the ratio? Were you cognizant of it? Were you thinking, well, there aren't a whole lot of women in this field? Or did that matter to you at all?
A little bit, but my aunt is actually one of like the first... electrical engineering RIT grad, female RIT grad. So she really persuaded me to go into this, and she kind of explained to me that it's obviously a lot different than when she went there, but it was something that I was still going to have to deal with. So it was never really deferring for me, but it definitely was on my mind.
Okay. And what are the ratios like when you take classes?
One or two girls in a classroom of about, I think we have about 25, 30 in a class.
One or two. Still?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I think maybe one of my engineering classes had like four girls, and I think it's because we all signed up together for that section.
Would you be more comfortable if there was something closer to parity?
I don't necessarily feel uncomfortable by the guys. I'm very comfortable around guys as it is. I have a lot of guy friends, so for me personally, it's not. But it definitely is comforting when we go into like our meetings with the Society of Women Engineers, and it's a lot more... different of an environment than when you're in the male environment. So the classroom would definitely be different, I believe.
And so have you witnessed women treated in ways that are differently from the men students?
Definitely.
And you have.
And definitely the men students will express that you are different more so than teacher. I mean, the professors are definitely very fair, and we have a great staff at MCC, so I've never felt uncomfortable by the staff. But definitely the students will be like, oh, well, you only get good grades because you're a female, and they want to encourage you to, you know, be in this program and
stuff.
Someone
has said that to you?
Yeah, people say stuff all the time.
You don't take that, do you?
No. No, I don't. But they do definitely make a lot of comments, so...
Wow. Yeah. Professor Waddick, when you hear that, that's got to be a little discouraging. Oh. And again, we're not saying, and by the way, we're not indicting all male students.
Oh,
it's not all of them.
Not.
I mean, but even if it's one or two here and there, that's discouraging.
Oh, sure it is. And it's probably, coming from a fact of, jealousy or whatever to because it's a very difficult program to be in. And then when they see success in somebody else and they don't compare in the same way, they don't want to look at inwardly to themselves for the reason, and probably looking external for, oh, there must be some reason other than just merit. But I can tell you with students like Kirsten and several other women, it is merit-based.
I certainly have no doubt. And so, Kirsten, let's go back even before your college experience, because over the last 10 years, we've seen a much stronger push to attract more of a balance, men and women in STEM, in engineering, and as we've laid out on this program, we're nowhere close to parity there. Mm-hmm. But was there anything for you that brought you into the field? Was it family? Was it a teacher early on? What was the interest like for you?
Definitely my family was a big push. My dad's also an engineer, mm-hmm. so there was always a big push in engineering in the family. But when I was younger, when I was in high school, starting high school, they had options to choose whether you wanted to go the art track, the tech track, or the music track sort of thing. And so I went the tech track, and I loved that. And we had, I can't remember the name of the program, but we had local companies that would like sponsor us to be able to do, have 3D model programming and stuff. So we got to work with a lot of those different things and get us early on started into that stuff. So that really is really where it started and grew from there. And then my senior year, I was fortunate enough to do some internships around the area. so with some engineering corporations.
Do you think there needs to be more of a push to bring more women in? I mean, what could possibly change it?
Yeah, because I think in general we're looking at trying to put students into science programs, and that's a big push in high schools and such, but there's not necessarily in the high school as much push for the women. It's just in general, we need more students in science, we need more engineers, we need more, you know, scientists and such. So the women is more of a push once you get into like college. That's when it's like, oh, we need more women. You hear that a lot, and you need, and we have like the societies and stuff like that. So there definitely needs to be more of a push at like a younger level. But there are still a lot of programs like Girl Scouts and such that really do push science and stuff into women as well.
Well, Cassandra Claiborne's here, the director of HR for Harris Corp, and kind of representing the employer perspective. First of all, just in terms of female engineers at Harris, the number is roughly what?
10%.
10%. So close to the national average. We just don't see a whole lot. But we're also curious to know what kind of engineering positions are open. Are we seeing a shift in the kinds of engineering work that you guys are doing?
We are. Historically, we've hired hardware engineers, electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, and right now our focus is on software engineers, computer science engineers, computer engineering majors, programming language, and those skill sets.
Do you want to see more women?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. We are have a focus on hiring women. We try to recruit from schools that have a higher level of female engineers, RIT being one of them. And we try to target women, particularly from those types of schools, for our engineering positions.
Just feel better about more of a balanced gender staff if you can get it?
Absolutely. You know, when we talk about some of the reasons why I think women are not in engineering, it's because it's not a non-traditional field for women. And we're trying to have programs with the city school district, the STEM programs, and partnering with other colleges to interest women in those fields at an earlier age.
Well, at least we're seeing with Dr. Lamb, and you heard Kirsten Dodson say, some of your classes with 30 students, you would be sometimes the only female or maybe one of two. That's at MCC. But at RIT, you're seeing some stronger numbers now?
Yes. So we have actually a specific program in our college that's called We at RIT, so Women in Engineering at RIT. And we actually have sister programs in the College of Applied Science and Technology and the College of Information and Computing. Mm-hmm. And what we do in those programs is it sets up a community. And by setting up this community, it allows our women students to be more successful. And we end up with, right now, the incoming class is about 25% women. And overall, we're hovering around 20 to 22% women in all of the engineering college.
I know you're not going to say you're satisfied with that, but you feel strong about that.
We feel very strongly that we're making positive progress. I feel sad that it's as slow as it is, but we've made a huge amount of progress. I started at RIT in 2006, and the We at RIT program started in 2004. At that point, we were hovering around 12%. So we've made,
you basically
doubled it. So that is very just an awesome thing. What I do want to circle back to is the reason we're talking about this and women in engineering, and actually it's a diversity issue too. The reason you want to have more women and more diversity in engineering is because it's been shown by research that diverse teams make better products, better solutions, because you have all these different people coming to the table with different points of view. If you're all coming from a very similar background, you're not going to be able to problem solve the same diverse way.
And by the way, what she just described can be applied to just about any field. The fact that American newsrooms are still something like 80% white indicates, we have issues with diversity in American journalism. We have issues of diversity in all kinds of different spheres. And yeah, that can prevent you, not intentionally, it doesn't mean we're maliciously not trying to seek out different perspectives, but if it's all women in one room, if it's all men in another room, that kind of thing, I think, does prevent possible perspectives from being achieved. And are you seeing better outcomes now that you've doubled the women? What do you think?
So our women students are very good. They tend to stay at a higher rate than the male students, so there's more attrition of our male students than there is of our female students. I think part of that is also because it's self-selected. The women who do choose to go into engineering are very driven, and they've made that choice very consciously, whereas some of the male students maybe still be pushed. I mean, some of our female students are also pushed, and they are also going to go somewhere else because maybe it wasn't the right choice for them. But overall, we retain a lot more of our women students than we do of our male students. And our students are getting placed in very good positions. Now, it's only been a recent thing, so we don't have any longevity studies in terms of do these women, when they become engineers in companies, actually stick it out.
By the way, for our listeners who want to call me on a stat, I was making an approximation. Somebody's going to tell me it's 90% white in general. I think it is, actually, but I don't have the number at my fingertips. What I'm here to tell you is it is disproportionately white in journalism. It's disproportionately male in engineering. And the number that we do have, at least according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics from 2013, 14% of American engineers are women, 86% men. That's the effort, and that's what we're talking about this hour with our monthly science roundtable. John Waddick is here, a professor of engineering science and physics at MCC. Dr. Mark Lamb is here, a senior lecturer at RIT and a faculty advisor for the Society of Women Engineers. Cassandra Claiborne here from Harris, and Kirsten Dodson, the first female president of the Student Engineering Leadership Council at MCC. So we're talking about those experiences. You can find me on Twitter at Evan Dawson, and you can call the program 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Let me get our first comment from a listener in this hour, and it comes from Jake. He says, in the same light as your show on the humanities, I'm a little worried about hyper-specialization in all college degrees, including STEM fields. Though I see this less in engineering than most fields, just wonder your guest thoughts on diversity of knowledge. That's from Jake, and Jake seems to be lining up with what Fareed Zakaria said from CNN, saying we're too focused on STEM to our own detriment. So let me first start with a student in the room. Kirsten, do you feel like you're so focused, hyper-focused on engineering that you're missing some of the humanities, some of the broad look at your education?
I definitely don't think so. I think that when you're in any program in college, you get a wide variety of different classes and courses that you're required to take. And personally, I'm so involved also in the business side of things that I'm also starting to take up some of those classes. So I definitely don't think I personally am one track minded on STEM, and I want to diversify and get out there and go, you know, outside of just staying in an office and working on, you know, a little engineering job all day. So I don't believe so, but I definitely think that some people could be focused more on just straight STEM.
Steve Jobs and Tim Cook from Apple, the late Steve Jobs and Tim Cook, have both said engineering is vitally important to Apple, but humanities still plays a role, that you have to be able to apply engineering concepts to the way we use and think. And Jobs even described it occasionally as soulful, that the humanities still plays a part in an engineer's career. Truett Harris?
Absolutely. You know, obviously we want people who have the skill sets
Absolutely.
That we need, but we also need diversity of thought. So we want people who you know, participate in other activities and aren't just focused on their studies all the time. So, yeah, absolutely, we want people who have more broader thinking and have involved in other activities.
John Waddick, I wonder if Zakaria's point is sort of sets up kind of a false choice, which is that you can focus on STEM or you can focus more broadly, as opposed to saying we can attract more people, especially more women into STEM, while still offering a kind of a broad education.
Well, you know, I think the way that we've taught engineering has changed quite a bit over the last 30 years. I mean, we're more into trying to develop the whole person now, as opposed to just the technical side. So you see in engineering programs, RIT, MCC, around the nation, a lot more project work, a lot more emphasis on writing and speaking and teamwork. So it's more than just the technical part. But, you know, you do make a good point about the specialization. And there is debate in our field about how engineering should be done. I mean, in most professions, you need to get a graduate degree to practice professionally. Engineering is probably one of the few that with just a bachelor's degree, you can become a professional in that career. Now, because of that, that means that you're jam-packed with technical knowledge that you need in just a bachelor's degree. So some say that, hey, maybe the credential to start in engineering is a master's degree, and you should use your bachelor's degree to be more well-rounded. That debate's been going around for a long time.
What do you think, Dr. Lynn?
Well, I think here in New York State, you know, we are, in getting our diploma, you have to have a certain number of credits of non-degree granting, so meaning in outside of your specific diploma. So you need to take so many humanities and math and science. And so our students do get a well-rounded education. It is an engineering education. So yes, they get a fair amount of technical background, but they can't get out of taking some classes that are philosophy or in those types of fields. So I think to say that they're very specific is in a way missing the point. I look at the lower classes, they're still very broad. They haven't changed much probably since my dad took it. And actually, if his dad had been an engineer, probably not since he had taken it. So I'm not sure where they're talking about the specification. I think that comes a little bit later in years, well, for us, years 4 and 5, because we're a 5-year program because of the co-op system. And so at that point, yes, you're taking more technical classes that are more specific so that you can tailor yourself a little bit more towards whatever career you want to take. Because mechanical engineering or all engineering fields are very broad in and of themselves, and you do have to specialize a little bit, or you're going to be too broad for a company. You're not going to be very useful.
I think of, to answer Jake's question, I think of the Eastman versus Juilliard Music School debate, and I'll be a homer for the Rochester-based Eastman School of Music. They boast on the fact that Eastman School students still have to get a broad-based education, whereas Juilliard, and please, someone from Juilliard, call and correct me and tell me how wrong I am, but I've heard from Eastman students who say, we are broad-based, and sometimes that can be irksome, but it's better in the long run as opposed to being all music all the time. But it does sound like each program is different, apples to apples or oranges, as Fareed Zakaria is talking about. And it does sound like the programs represented on this show today are thinking about broad-based education. Sure, you're going to be focused on engineering. Now, Kara writes to the program, thanks so much for having the show. We have to stop describing engineering jobs as non-traditional for females. I understand why you do, but that has to change. That's Kara's comment, and let me start right with Kirsten. What do you think?
I agree, and actually, I just did a panel a couple weeks ago with women, and it was a huge topic was, why are we, like, selectively putting women in this group, and why do we have, you know, why do we have to have special groups for women and, you know, to do that? But I think that right now, for us to say it's non-traditional, it's something to spark and inspire change. As of right now. And we need to get to a point where it's like, okay, well, women are engineers and that's normal. And it's no different than men being engineers. But as of right now, we can't say that that's the way that it is. And until you get into this field and you really see how it really is that way.
So in other words, we may not like the term non-traditional, but the facts bear out that right now it's not traditional.
It's really not. And you really, until we see a huge change, we really can't say that it is traditional.
Okay. Yeah. I said it was non-traditional because if you look at the workplace, you don't see a lot of women in the engineering field.
Which is
field.
Exactly what Kirsten's saying. Yeah. Yeah. So, but again, that the goal is to change that. And I don't think you said it as a knock at all on the notion of women.
Absolutely STEM. Not. I say it's why I think women don't enter that field as much is because they don't have the role models and they don't see the opportunities there.
Dr. Lamb, what do you think?
Yeah, so I actually want to go off your role model thing. So what makes we at RIT so successful is actually this Friday, we're going to have accepted open student house on Saturday, and all the accepted women can come in on Friday and participate in a program. So these are all high school seniors who potentially are going to go to RIT. They've accepted it. And they all come to campus and go through this one-day program where they'll go to different classes, they'll have some activities, and just spend time together. It is so powerful to see the 100, I'm not exactly sure what the number is at this point, but it was over 135 last time I talked to Jody Carville, who is the departing director of We at RIT. So, yeah, it's really amazing because that kind of having all those young ladies in one place, they look around and are like, I'm in a sea of faces. whoa, look at this big ocean. I'm not, you know, I'm not one or two. And they go to other campuses and they'll tell us that they feel like they're literally one of a few on that whole campus. And that may not be true, but it's the feeling they get. Yeah. Whereas if they come to this program and all you're surrounded with are women, it can be a very strong statement.
John?
You know, having a support system under you is really important. I think Marcus said that before. But, you know, that's one of the reasons why, you know, we started a Society of Women Engineers club at MCC, because the women can come together and can feel a support system and help each other out and, you know, make those social connections that are so important to, you know, being successful in any field. But it does point out, you know, the direction that we're going here in this conversation is we can't just do the same thing we've been doing. Otherwise, we're going to just perpetuate the past. RET is broken out of that mold, and probably like to hear more about that. But role models is important, especially on the faculty side, Evan. And right now in our engineering program, we have 8 males and 0 females. Now, obviously, if a young female or even not so young female is in a class and never sees, you know, women engineers in front of the class, I think that's kind of sending some kind of hidden message, which is why, you know, we have a job opening now. And I'm glad to say that in our finalist candidate pool, we have about 50% women. And we specifically targeted that. And that's a high priority in our department's goals this year.
Let me get to the phones. This is Paul in Brighton. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, I just wanted to comment that I'm past 65 now, and I've completed my career in engineering. And, you know, as I got older, more and more women engineers came on board in the various places that I worked. And I certainly found them to be as capable as any of the male engineers that were working with me. One thing, though, that does become a problem for women is that most women, as most men do, want to have a family and they want to have children. And whether it's evolution or God or something else, whatever you want to call it, the disproportionate burden of having children falls on women, both in giving birth to them and in helping to rear them. And that has to be addressed. I've come to the conclusion that we as a society have to provide some way to allow women to have this very important part of life, and at the same time allow them to resume their careers if they should take time off to have children and to rear them. That's going to be a very substantial financial burden to all of us, because we have to share that cost. It has to be shared by men and women and by society in general. And I'd like to hear the comments of your panel on that.
Paul, thank you. And that's a great point that Paul's making there. We just saw New York State pass 9 of the – well, I think we're seeing New York State right now in the legislative session pass 9 of the 10 planks on the women's equality agenda, one of them being more stringent protections for women who are seeking jobs. Employers already, they can't say to you, well, this job may fit you, but hope you're not planning on having kids. But we know that that has been said. We know that that happens. And what Paul is talking about is the fact that women – sometimes pay a penalty in their career simply for the sake of wanting to start a family, the kind of penalty that men don't pay. So let me start with Dr. Lamb. What do you make of Paul's comments, and how do we sort of keep progressing that women are not going to be penalized for starting a family?
Well, I certainly agree that that needs to be addressed. I think it is slowly being addressed, like everything is being slowly addressed. When I look around my department, and what happens is we have almost 30% women in mechanical engineering. So that's a huge amount. We all have children who are anywhere from babies to college age kids. And so we have to deal with the fact that my job is very flexible, but when I have to teach, I have to teach. And that's what I get paid for. I can't just take time and put in a substitute. I'm the subject matter expert. I really have to think about it. And what happens is there are a lot of people around me who are able to help me with that. So when I do have a child who is ill enough that I can't go to work, then I can call them up and they can cover for me so that I don't have to cancel lots of classes. Now, that's going to be hard in the workplace. And employers who think this is important are doing lots of things to try to make the business environment more friendly, that these women can take off. And so what's ironic is in some companies, you do have a very positive environment. These women can take off time if their children get sick and it's not penalized and you don't end up having to take vacation days if it's truly honestly for sickness. And, you know, these women aren't going to take advantage of it because they understand they've got a great deal. But the people do have, other people have to pick up the slack for you not being there, and there is that resentment. So I've read articles and heard interviews where that is a problem. So if somebody feels resentful for helping to pick up the slack, that can create tension in the long run. And that's really sad because in the long run, we all were children. We all had mothers. And, you know, I believe a mother who's happy and therefore can balance work life and being at home, because I'm a working mother, that I'm a more productive member for society.
And we have the employer perspective here with Cassandra Claiborne. So with Harris, you want to see more female engineers. How do you address Paul's points about the fact that some women are penalized unfairly and sometimes illegally? How do you make sure women feel comfortable that you're young, you're starting out, we want you, we want you to build your career here? If you start a family, that's your choice and you won't be penalized.
Yeah, first of all, Harris offers flexible work schedules for women. We offer reduced work schedules for women and for men. There are lots of dads who partner with their spouse to care for their children and daycare and all those types of things. So I think we need to take the emphasis off of women as it impacting their career, or that they're going to perform at a lower level or have less time. As a working mother myself, you know, you do what you have to do, and we need to change the mindset that it's a negative impact on a woman's career or her performance. Because she has children, or because she has to care for them, or she's the primary, you know,
caregiver. Right.
Caregiver.
Right. Well, let me ask Kirsten. I mean, that may be way off down the line in your own life, and I'm not going to grill you on that. But I want to know, as a student, when you think about your own career, have you heard stories that women in the workplace are dealing with some of these things? Does that worry you at all about your eventual future in the workplace?
Definitely, but we actually have been fortunate enough to go to several conferences recently with mm-hmm. some women engineers, and that was one of the topics that was brought up at the past conference we went to in Philadelphia. And some of these women have actually started groups within these engineering corporations, and they kind of address the issues that they want to see fixed and bring them forward as a group to, you know, have changes. Small things, too, such as that, you know, men might not always, we're not asking for anything extra, but one thing that they had said is their lab jackets, they couldn't fit them when they were pregnant, so they had to get maternity lab jackets. And it was nothing that the men, you know, were discriminating. They weren't, you know, but they just never thought of that kind of stuff. So I think it's important for women now to step up and address the issues that they see as well, and, you know, to pave the way for, you know, women such as me in the future to be able to make it a little bit easier on us and to constantly be that change that you see.
Our monthly science roundtable is looking at women in STEM, particularly women in engineering. And our very impressive panel includes the voice you just heard. That's Kirsten Dodson, a student known as a pioneer, the first female president of the Student Engineering Leadership Council. She's at MCC. Cassandra Claiborne's here as well, the director of HR for Harris Corporation. Dr. Mark Lamb is here, a senior lecturer at RIT and a faculty advisor for the Society of Women Engineers. And John Waddick is here, professor of engineering, science, and physics at MCC. And by the way, the 2014 U.S. Professor of the Year for Community Colleges. That's two different mentions now, by the way, in the hour. So,
well, you didn't mention the other thing. Is I am also the advisor of the Society of Women Engineers, so I'm very proud of that.
You should be very proud of that, and that's exactly right. We're going to get back to the phones in a minute. We're late for a break. And then when we come back for the break, we're going to address Jack's comment. Jack writes to the program, quote, "Sorry, but you'll always have more women in psychology and sociology. You'll always have more men in engineering. Gender differences are real, and there's nothing wrong with them." That's from Jack. We'll see what the panel says about that after this short break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections. When it comes to presidential primaries, why are Iowa and New Hampshire always first and second? How come there's no rotation? New York voters tend to feel left out of the process. We don't see the candidates come here. Two of the least diverse states in the country seem to get all the attention. What would it take to change that? Then second hour, we reviewed the book, The Astronaut's Wives Club, with the author who's coming to Rochester.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Landmark Society of Western New York, presenting the documentary Downside Up at the Smith Opera House in Geneva, part of the Statewide Preservation Conference, Thursday, April 16th. Details at landmarksociety.org/conference.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and our monthly science roundtable continues as we look at women in STEM. Still, only 14% of American engineers are women. And Jack writes to the program, "Sorry, but you'll always have more women in psychology and sociology. You'll always have more men in engineering. Gender differences are real, and there's nothing wrong with them." And Mark Lamb jumped right in to say, they used to say that about what?
So they used to say that about physicians. Back in the 70s, there were very few women doctors. It was mainly males. And the AMA decided that that wasn't good. We wanted more diversity. We want women in it. So they put out these programs. And nobody these days will say that women can't be doctors. And if you look at an incoming class for medical school, it's probably close to 50-50. While I do believe that there's gender differences, I have two boys and I see my nieces, and there's certainly behavior differences and other differences, I still believe that that has nothing to do with your ability to succeed in engineering.
John, what do you think?
Well, there's a lot of societal challenges out there, Evan, that aren't going to be solved with the same old way we look at things. And like was mentioned earlier, we're going to need new ways of thinking, and that means new diverse ways, and that means diverse populations of engineers. So, well, maybe, yeah, there may be always might be a few more males than females going into engineering, but where we are right now is nowhere near where we should be. Women look at problems differently, and we need those differences to really move forward as a society.
Cassandra?
I think there needs to be more of a connection from the employer perspective to the community, partnering with the schools and exposing young women and young girls to the engineering field, because they're probably not aware of those opportunities and, you know, that they exist.
Okay. And Kirsten, what do you think?
I've always been... There's always going to be differences, and that's a problem. But moving forward, I think that it's people that are one-track minded like that that are not allowing the change. And, you know, and like I said earlier, there's boys that look down upon the females in the department, and it's those people who aren't open-minded to allowing females to come in and show how strong we can be that are holding other females back, because it takes one guy to tell a young girl, well, you know, you'd be better off in that psychology major, that they're going to feel that way and they're going to take that personally. And that's why I like to go out and do outreach and tell girls, no, you can be strong and be who you want to be and go into these fields, because just because males are dominantly there right now doesn't mean that you can't be in there too.
Jake jumps right back in to respond to Jack's comment. He writes, quote, "Someone might want to tell Jack that some of those gender differences actually make women better in STEM fields, and it takes both sexes to have a rounded conversation about anything." That's from Jake. Bonnie in Rochester wants to follow up on that. Bonnie, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess, you know, in any profession, of course, there's a kind of agreed upon certain standards and skills you have to learn. So that's a commonality. But I wanted to ask the women there, regarding engineering itself, what kinds of things do you think that women might bring to engineering that aren't generally maybe more, you know, traditional or more male-oriented in thinking, realizing they're not all men think alike, but generally what do the women there think that to engineering itself women might bring to that field?
Thank you, Bonnie.
So I actually have a really good example of why a diverse team is good. So some of the early airbag designs, I mean, we now take an airbag in a car for granted, but, you know, that had to be designed and worked out. And so the very early team that designed that was actually made up of males who were all over 5'10" to 6'2", somewhere in that range. And they designed an airbag that was going to protect them when there was a crash. And then they put these airbags in, and all of a sudden, women and small or short-statured people were getting killed by these airbags. And the reason was because there was too much force. The shorter people have to sit closer to the steering wheel because obviously they have a shorter reach. And therefore, the explosion of the bag had too much force behind it and therefore impacted on their chest and actually killed them instead of saving them. So that was a problem, which in hindsight, it's like, how did they not know? But you have a team of people working who are all of the same size and effectively shape and therefore aren't thinking of a very petite person. And so that's why you need all kinds, shapes, sizes, colors, genders. That's it.
Well said. Anyone want to add to that? Yeah, Kirsten?
One thing I like to look at is there's engineering in every single thing that you touch, use throughout the day. Engineers designed it, were a part of creating it, making it work. So for you to just think about all the daily things you go through, if you want to think about men creating every single thing that applies to women and children and males as well, you need to have that diversity so those different people can put their input in and help all the diverse people that we have in this world. So it's important not to just have, like she said, you know, if you have one type of group working on one simple project, it's not going to be able to help. They're not going to be able to, they've never lived the life of another gender and such, so they can't really create things that are going to help that gender specifically or help children or and such.
Makes sense at Harris, Cassandra?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, why would anyone think that a woman can't be successful in these fields or any field, right? Especially in 2015. It's just hard to believe.
Well, let me get back to a question on the web because we've had a couple of questions come in about what the job market is like for engineers. I'm going to hit that in a second. But let me grab Nancy's question as well, which came in from the web. She writes, quote, there seems to be a gap in exposure to engineering fields for girls in late elementary and middle school, especially in computer science. They lose interest before getting to high school. If we approach the gap by mentoring and guiding girls in engineering-related fields without the stigma of being a geek, but rather problem solvers, and letting the girls see all that engineering has to offer, we can reduce the gender differences in the sciences. That's Nancy. She had a couple of points there. Nancy's saying she sees a gap in exposure, engineering fields for girls, late elementary to middle school. Kirsten, yeah or no?
I definitely agree with that. When you're actually in the schools, you know, we've had a lot of discussions, especially at our Society of Women Engineer group, to go at that age and, you know, talk to girls and expose them. And, you know, like I said, there's great programs like Girl Scouts and such, but not every girl is in programs like that. So it's really important to expose them at this, like, you know, at that level in the actual schools. And there are groups, and I'm sure RIT goes out as well and does outreach, but we can't outreach to every single girl. There's no way to be able to do that. But to be able to implement that into the actual school systems would definitely help with more outreach.
Yeah, Harris participates in the first robotics program that introduces students to engineering and technology fields, and that starts in the middle schools. And we support a team out of Penfield High School, but there are first robotics programs in a lot of the schools in Monroe County area. We also held an event for Engineering Week where our Women's Interactive Network sponsored 20 young female students to come into our Jefferson Road Operations Center and do a tour of the center. They had a panel conversation and they introduced these young females to engineering careers. So outreach, I think, is a big part of introducing women or young girls to engineering.
She also brought up a geek stigma, which I hadn't even actually considered. I'm not just saying that, but I understand the point Nancy's making. But I think back to what Neil deGrasse Tyson said on this program, which was every child is born a scientist. Every child is born someone who loves to solve mysteries, explore the world, get into things with their hands. And that at some point along the way, if a child is no longer interested in science, most of the time, we've done something to sort of kind of diffuse that interest in some way. We've kept them inside all day when they wanted to be out exploring or playing or trying new things. We don't let them be hands-on enough. We call science geeky, those kinds of things. And so I don't know, Mark. I just feel like to some degree, if Nancy's right, if there is a geek stigma, that is still revelatory of a societal problem that we don't view science, engineering included, as something that is just inherent in all of us.
I would think. What do you think?
Yeah. So the geek stigma, I don't know. I mean, I look at my own husband who's in the medical field, and he's geek number one in our house. His son's number two and three, really. And I am definitely in there bringing up the rear. So that word itself, I just have a problem with. Is there a stigma? Yeah, there probably is. But what I think I found is that the girls who are successful tend to still have fathers or uncles who are engineers. I myself and Kirsten mm-hmm. has a father who is an engineer. So we have a very close relative, and that very close relative keeps telling us. And parental support has been shown to be extremely important, that you just need to keep saying over the years, you know, you may get... women just take things more to heart, whereas a man can take a criticism and just shake it off and go, you know, either, yeah, sure, that was good, I'll change something, or, meh, I'm not going to even listen to that. We women tend to really internalize everything we hear, and that makes it really hard to then move forward. And so we need to have a strong commitment. It's extremely difficult for institutions like MCC and RIT, with our limited resources, to go into every school in the area. We get asked all the time. We have programs at RIT that we'd like these young ladies to participate, but again, it's only so many that can participate in the program. So it's difficult, but I agree that we need to try to keep encouraging those middle school children.
Stigma at all come up for you?
The geek stigma?
Yeah. Not a concern?
For me, I'm a very social person, and I've always been the type of person where, you know, you can have your interests, and my interests are what they would consider not so geeky, but then I go into school and I do what I need to do at school, and those are my interests at school. So for me, I've never gotten the geek thing. No one's ever called me a geek or a nerd, but I think that at the younger levels, definitely there was a lot more stigma. And when I was younger, I wanted to be a teacher or a doctor, so because, you know, there is that stigma like, oh, you're a nerd, you want to be in science and stuff. So I think that at a younger level, I think it's also important for parents to, like she said, parents to encourage their children, whether they want to be in science or not, that is not a geeky thing or a negative thing. And that's the other thing, is that the whole geek thing is negative now, and it shouldn't be. You know, we shouldn't have, but it's changing. We have a lot of shows on TV that's making geeks look cool and, you know, and such, so... But it's never really been a problem for me necessarily.
No, I'm glad to hear that. But I think that's an interesting point, that at that middle school level is where it can be the most vulnerable. And
yeah.
Such an important developmental time. So Nancy from Greece, well said, and a good point there. All right, a couple questions about the job market. Harris, for example, how are things going in terms of job market for people who are in engineering, students now, they're looking around. What do you tell them, Cassandra? What does Harris tell them about whether they're in a field where there is work to be found?
There's absolutely work to be found. We are currently hiring new college grads for our upcoming fiscal year, starting in June. We have co-op opportunities every quarter. So we hire about, I think, 15 co-ops per quarter to come in and work for 3-4 months. And hopefully those students will eventually turn into full-time college grads. We also hire experienced engineers, and we have openings for experienced engineers, particularly in the software fields right now.
John, when you have students come to you and say, where am I going to find work? What do you tell them?
It doesn't, I mean, most of them already have that knowledge in their mind that this is the hot field to get into as far as, you know, finding a job. I don't think most people in society are thinking, oh, engineering, that's going to be a tough thing to find a job in. So it's not something that's really on the minds of students. I mean,
well, let's ask the student here. You agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the 4-year schools now, I mean, MCC, we typically, most of our students transfer out and they go and get their bachelor's. You're not really going to keep your associates necessarily in engineering. But, you know, you go to these schools and they have like 95, 96, 98% placement rates within the first couple months of graduation. And you talk to these students who are graduating. One of my mentors at RIT, she already has a job and hasn't even graduated yet. They are pulling constantly. You go to the conferences and there's 500 plus companies wanting you all the time, so especially females. So I definitely don't, I'm not nervous at all. I definitely see myself getting a job in the future.
Market?
I agree. Our placement at RIT of our graduates is phenomenal. Some of the young ladies I work with through SWE that are graduating had 3, 4, 5 offers, and it's actually been difficult to figure out which one they want. So that's a good problem to have.
I hope we've answered the question there. But one more quick follow-up then, Kirsten, for example. If you want to live around here, in the area where you grew up, do you think you can find engineering work here?
Definitely, in Rochester, definitely. We have a huge market in Rochester, and it's one of those jobs that I feel like you could move anywhere and find a job. There's really so many opportunities.
All right, one more quick comment from the web. Doug writes, gender differences have nothing to do with it. Historically, women were excluded from Western universities and scientific scholarship as early as the 13th century by a misogynist monastic tradition out of which European universities emerged. I don't know if the history tracks, but the point is, Doug is saying it's not an inherent gender difference. It's something that was cultivated over centuries of exclusion of women. Okay. Anybody want to? I don't know the history on that, Doug, but.
I don't either. And so I'll go back to my comment about the medical profession. They were able in 10 years to turn around from having almost no women to 50-50. It's possible. It's just that we need to find the right words, the right. Engineering is about problem solving. It's about helping society. And we need to let the girls know that that's what engineering is about.
All right, last word goes to John Waddick as we wrap up here. Where do you want people to go? Either online, learn for more. They've got young kids. They've got girls. They want them to think about these things. What resources would you send them to?
Well, I think SWE.org would be a good one to start. That's SocietyWomenEngineers.org. And certainly they can get in touch with MCC, MonroeCC.edu.
Thank you for being here, John. Great to talk to you.
Thank you very much,
Dr. Mark Lamb from RIT. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Glad to get Harris's perspective from Cassandra Claiborne. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Ms. Dodson, I have no concerns about your future, and I think that it's going to be fascinating to see how the numbers change, but you really represent your field well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to our Science Roundtable, the monthly Science Roundtable today. Val LeBanc, a great job as our engineer behind the glass. Different kind of an engineer, but an engineer nonetheless behind the glass. She's nodding away. She's a great engineer. Have a great afternoon. We'll talk to you Tuesday on Connections.